The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Good evening. My name is Elizabeth Richard, and I'm the daughter of Barbara Gaughan Day, in whose name tonight's lecture is dedicated. My mother was a longtime supporter of the Free Library, a dedicated volunteer on behalf of the Free Library Foundation, and I know she would be so proud to have her name linked to a treasured program like this author series. For over 30 years, the library has been a sought-out destination for the world's finest writers, and our family was honored to be able to establish an endowment to ensure the continuation of this program and many others that have helped support the author events with private contributions. And if you've not done so, I hope you will consider making a gift of any size by June 30th. On behalf of the foundation, I thank you in advance. And now on to why we're here tonight. Our lecture tonight is being delivered by National Medal of the Arts 2013 honoree, Julia Alvarez. She is a renowned poet, essayist, fiction writer, renowned for her lyrical, poignant, and politically insightful books. These many books include How the Garcia Girls Lost Their Accents, which details the lives of four sisters before and after their exile in the Dominican Republic, In the Time of the Butterflies, a million-copy bestseller that was selected by the National Endowment for the Arts as its national big read program, and Afterlife, a novel that explores the notion of keeping faith with our fellow humans in a broken world. Her first two books have a special attachment to me and my mother, as both were published during my time when I was an undergraduate at Middlebury College, where our author this evening was on faculty. I never had the pleasure of taking one of Professor Alvarez's class, but my mother, ever the reader, sent me both of these books as she was always on the lookout for all things Middlebury. Her many awards include the F. Scott Fitzgerald Award for Achievement in American Literature, a Latina Leader Award in Literature from the Congressional Hispanic Caucus Institute, and the Hispanic Heritage Award in Literature. In her newest work, The Cemetery of Untold Stories, Alvarez explores the very nature of storytelling in the tale of a fiction writer who finds that her buried untold stories have taken on the lives of their own, and she'll be in conversation this evening with Rebecca Hay Colon, Professor of Latinx Studies at Temple University. Please join me in welcoming them to the stage.
Thank you. Gracias, everybody.
Yes, thank you, everybody, for being here. Such an honor and a pleasure to be in conversation with Julia Alvarez, somebody who probably had a lot to do with me becoming a college professor and seeing work of literature of this nature and with these stories actually existing. So thank you for that. And I think we will start today with a reading from the novel, because I imagine not everybody here has had a chance yet to read this beautiful book. I really, really hope that you get it and enjoy it, because it is gorgeous. But please, let us give the word to Julia first.
Well, it's always hard to read from a novel, you know, because you don't know where to enter it, and you don't want to give all this background. It doesn't mean anything until you're inside the book. But I'm going to read from a section, there's the second section, where Alma, our protagonist, a.k.a. Scheherazade, she's chosen a pen name because she comes from a good old Latina mommy and papi family, where they're outraged that she's writing these books with characters that know things that nice girls shouldn't know. So to avoid any more family drama, she's always published under Scheherazade, who was her heroine growing up, the woman that tells stories and saves her life by telling stories. So anyhow, Alma, once her parents are gone, inherits a piece of land, and she's an aging writer, and she's lost steam and animo, and she's a little bit disheartened by the publishing world, and she decides you know, it's over. It's the end of this writing life. But she's still haunted by all these characters and unfinished manuscripts and all these stories she wanted to tell, and that she realizes she's never going to end up telling. But they haunt her, and because she's Caribbean, and because we do these things, she has to exercise them. And so what better way than when she inherits a little piece of land to take all these manuscripts and boxes and go to the piece of property down there and create a cemetery for her untold stories. So this second part opens, and you suddenly are in a different point of view. You're with the people in the barrio, and they're all, you know, we're good Dominicans, wondering, ¿qué es lo que está pasando? ¿Qué es lo que van a hacer? Who's coming? What's being built there? Because it's, you know, they go through different ideas. Could it be this, that, or the other? And finally, they approach the foreman. And he said, they're very upset because they hear it's going to be a cemetery. They don't want, the town dump is already next to the barrio. And now they're going to dump their corpses here too? They're very upset. The foreman says, no, not to worry. It's not a cemetery for people. So they say, para mascotas, entonces? Those who work as maids and gardeners know firsthand how attached the rich are to their pets. When their little dogs die, the owners mourn them more than they do other people's children. But generally, these pets are buried on the grounds of their owners' estates. The foreman shakes his head. No, the cemetery is not for pets either. But if not for people or animals, who is it for? This is as much as the foreman has been told. All he knows is that he has never felt happier in his job. For the first time since he became a foreman, he pitches in, working the backhoe, removing stones alongside his Haitian crew. He leaves the job refreshed. No need to stop on the way home at the barra or colmado and pick up a bottle of ron and drown himself in forgetfulness, ignoring his mujer and swatting at his kids if they make too much noise. Instead, he converses openly with his wife and children, remembering things he had forgotten. Amorcito, his wife teases, did you eat parrot for your almuerzo today? The owner stops by to review the progress of her project. A skinny woman with a lined face, graying hair, and an unpronounceable name that sounds like Che Guevara. Doña, he addresses her by way of avoiding it. No, Doña, just call me Alma, la Doña says, shaking his hand like a man. She is accompanied by a small, energetic woman with the easier name of Brava, about the same age but half the size of the other. One would think she is a dwarf, but all her body parts are in the right proportions, except for her large workman hands. She talks a mile a minute. The locals continue to pester him, so the foreman decides to go ahead, phrasing his question as a community request. The people in the barrio would like to know who the cemetery will be for, if not for people or pets or toxic materials. The owner laughs, a bright, sharp sound which ignites the small one's laughter. Perdón, she apologizes. I don't mean to be secretive, just that people never understand when I tell them it's going to be a cemetery for stories. The foreman shakes his head the way he does at the beach to get water out of his ears. Cuentos, he repeats. The women laugh again. Yes, he has heard correctly. Interesting, the man says, so as not to appear ignorant. Next time someone asks, he says the cemetery is for locos, the crazed, the deranged. But wait, aren't locos people too? I'm just the foreman, he shrugs. A sign goes up on the wall at the main gate. Cementerio de Cuentos Nunca Contados, a cemetery for untold stories. The only way to enter is to speak into a small black box at the front gate. Cuéntame, a woman's soft voice requests. Tell me a story. Only then does the door open or not. So this is... This is the beginning of the cemetery. So there's a little intercom, and you have to press. And it says, cuéntame. And you have to tell the story.
So I love that you read that passage, because one of my first questions is about the cemetery itself. And thinking about, there are so many words for cemetery, and more in Spanish, actually, than in English. And one of the ones that we have in Spanish is Camposanto.
Camposanto.
Right?
Yeah.
And I love that word because it, if we're literally translating it right, it's like sacred ground.
Where you're.
And so the effect that the working on the cemetery has on the foreman, to me, I was like, this is so interesting. So can you tell us, like, were you thinking about Camposanto, like the fact of the cemetery as this sort of crossroads, right? This meeting of places and times and people. Can you just tell us more about this, how you thought about the cemetery?
Well, I've always been interested in liminal spaces, you know, being a hybrid, a diaspora person, Dominican American, you know, these places where cultures come together, those spaces are very rich with possibility because they're neither either or, they're both and more. And so the idea of a Campo Santo to me is a space that's very sacred, and there's all these traditions and lore in the Dominican Republic, and I mean in many countries around the cemetery, and you know what you should do and what you know how you honor the dead. And of course you know that Día de los Muertos in Mexico is this huge festival. You know, it's everything you can imagine. So I'm interested in cemeteries. And actually, we were talking about, you know, when, as a young professor, going from one place to another teaching, and we both have these nomadic histories where we taught here, we taught there, we taught there. And I did this in my 20s and 30s all over the country. And when I moved to Frankfort, Kentucky, one of the people there said to me, you know, you really want to get to know what a city's like. First place you got to go, the cemetery. Mm-hmm. How the people treat their dead says a lot about what kind of a town you're in. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, that's interesting, because I always liked hanging out in cemeteries. They kind of, they're like writing prompts to me. You know, there's a name, and then she died, and then there's three little tombstones beside her, and those were little babies, and you know, she lost them, and then there's another wife over here, and you're putting all the dots together and trying to figure out, what's the story here? And so, yeah, the idea of a cemetery is rich for me. And I thought, of course, you need a ritual. As this writer, she wants a ritual to put things to rest. And so she creates this cemetery, and thinking that now she can rest. She won't be haunted by all these stories that she never got done or told or that she got stuck in. And so she thinks that's going to be it. And it's like the protest sign. They tried to bury us. They did not know we were seeds. Mm-hmm. She tried to silence us. She did not know we were stories. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, the stories don't stay in the ground. And the barrio people who come from an oral culture and know how to listen start hearing things.
I mean, I...
But still buy the book. There's more surprises.
Yes, definitely do buy the book. But yes, like the stories don't rest, like they germinate. And it's so interesting in the novel how first one person basically becomes a dedicated listener, right? There's this cultivation of, you know, the story needs a listener. It doesn't exist on its own.
Right.
It needs a writer, a teller, but it also needs a listener. And I love the fact that you place so much emphasis on the listener, because one of the things that I also noticed in the book, which I was really glad to see because I don't see enough about it, is your engagement with illiteracy. Yeah. Right? People who maybe they don't read, Maybe they can't write, but they're great storytellers and great listeners. So can you tell us a little bit about Filomena?
Well, you know that we come from oral cultures. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did not come from a reading family or a reading country. It was oral storytelling. Mm-hmm. And oral storytelling is all about, you need a listener. You need your little community to hear it and bring it alive. And so that's always been, you know, very important to me, that oral culture. When I went to an MFA program and all my fellow classmates and my professors, you know, I've been reading since they were little and would talk about all the children's books they had read and then YA books and so forth and how they were writing from day one. I thought I had this imposter syndrome. I thought, I don't belong with these people. I love stories, but I don't have this literary culture. And then I started taking classes, and everything I was learning about pacing, humor, character, what to leave out, what to put in, how to create tension, I had learned in my childhood from people who many of them didn't know how to read or write, mm-hmm. but they knew how to tell stories. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, that there's this really rich, it's actually got a name now, orator. Mm-hmm. You know, oral literature, because we're recognizing that these cultures that we call underdeveloped, mm-hmm. illiterate, are rich with stories. And as diaspora people from those countries come to this country and become writers, we say, oh, Adichie, you know, what a great storyteller. Oh, you know, we recognize the Amy Tans, the Maxine Hong Kingston, the writers that came from oral cultures and are mm-hmm. here and have that rich legacy that they can tap into. So one of the people in the barrio who becomes the caretaker of the property is hired to just, you know, keep things cleaned up and, you know, weeding and stuff. But once Alma gets more comfortable with her, and Filomena says, well, I finished my job by midday. What else do you want me to do? She said, well, actually, there is something else. I want you to visit. There's these sculptures above each of the buried manuscripts that Brava, her friend, has created to honor the book that was never, the story that was never told. I want you to go by and sit for a while, and all you have to do is listen. Just listen. That's it? Okay. And she does it, and she does it very well. And the stories rise up and tell themselves to her. Yeah. And then we start connecting with her story. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I love the fact of the listener too, because it made me think of the people who are hired to cry, right, at funerals as well. So it's this whole performance of mourning and death, but particularly of awake, which is different, right? Like un velorio is different than necessarily thinking about someone dying. It's actually about celebrating their life and actually telling all the stories about their life and having food and having a party. And there's a writer called Christina Sharp who has a wonderful book called In the Wake on Blackness and Being.
On blackness and being.
And it's a book that is talking about a lot of things, but particularly about how blackness and death are intertwined, but there's a way of humanizing that death, right? And actually becoming awakened by that death, right? And there's such an awakening in Filomena and in the town with the cemetery.
And with the stories, because stories do that. They awaken us to other realities that we would not have any access to. And yes, the velorio in the DR goes on for 9 days. You take care of the body. Mm-hmm. You don't send it somewhere to be. You take care of the body and you accompany them, mm-hmm. because it's believed the spirit is there, you know, and sort of hanging around, and you accompany it. That death, you know, and it's a beautiful way. You take care of the body and you take care of the spirit.
Yeah.
And somehow that process brings that person, you know, their wonderful quote from T.S. Eliot, "We die with the dying. See, they depart, and we go with them. We are born with the dead. See, they return and bring us with them." So that there's a way in which, you know, after the period of grieving, that lost person somehow becomes embodied in the way that you want to continue living in the world because of who they were. And now they don't carry that self or spirit with them, so you carry it with them. And there's that's very much a part of our cultures, you know, that it's not we the living and that's it. We, all of it.
Yeah. Well, and at the end of the novel, I'm not going to spoil it, I'm just saying, at the end, the cemetery really becomes a communal gathering space. And so it really does seem as if there is this awakening of community, even, of all the people there, including, significantly, Alma. And please tell us, why is she named Alma?
Well, many of you probably know Alma means soul in Spanish. And we do that. Many Dominican names are, we always, you know, bilingual joking that you get the joke. We would translate our names into English and it would be Consolation or Concepcion. You know, it's always, but it just, these names are out there. But of course, you know, she is the aging writer who is at the end chapter, to give a story framework, at the end chapter of her life is becoming, and she, well, spoiler alert, she's becoming more of a soul and less substantial as the story progresses. So she is, you know, she is on the road to becoming an alma. So that name. But, you know, I think that one of the things you mentioned now about community, one of the wonderful things that happens is that, and that's why I like the Big Read program that goes, a community gets a book and everybody reads it and comes together to discuss it, is that stories are the DNA of our human family. And when you enter into someone's story, it's almost like their imaginative DNA is now part of your system. And stories create communities, you know, they really, really do. And reading creates communities, even though in reading we're together apart because we're reading it alone, but we're together with that world that's being created. But it's a great connection of a community. And actually, when you think of a community, country, or we share stories that we hold sacred, you know, that we...
That explain things that are unexplainable.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so you mentioned that when you were sort of learning the craft, you felt out of place, so to speak. And I think that's unfortunately still very common for many of us related to the Latino, Latinx experience. But you're now an elder for us in a wonderful way. Because we need elders.
We do.
Right? We need a tradition.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a way in which you don't understand what you're becoming. And so I'm wondering if you could think about how do you feel being the elder that you didn't have?
Oh, that's a good one. Wow. I think that that's such a good point because with this novel and Afterlife, I wanted my protagonist to be an older woman, you know, because the ageism in fiction, you know, the abuelita's in the background, she's cooking, and she makes an appearance, or the elder is dying on the first page and then giving away the money, and that's that. You know, it's just, and the complexity and nuance and all of that interest me a lot, and so I was hungry for novels that where there was an older protagonist, and so I found that there were gaps, and I've always been interested in writing into those silences. Mm-hmm. You know, with Garcia Girls, I was interested in writing about a Latina family and their, especially the women in the family, mm-hmm. and their experience of immigration, because I wasn't seeing it out there when I started writing. No such thing as multicultural mm-hmm. literature or any of that. So I wanted to write to that. And now the silence that I wanted to write, and I didn't, it wasn't like a mission, I had to do this for everyone. I was doing it for myself, mm-hmm. because I don't know things until I write things down. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to explore this landscape that I am now smack in the middle of growing old. What does it mean? Mm-hmm. With a further complication of a Latina growing mm-hmm. old that came from another culture, and what's that experience like for her? You know, to be aging in a craft, because, you know, we think of retirement when you have a job. How do you age? How do you finish mm-hmm. in a craft that you spent your life practicing, that you're passionate about? How do you, you've been writing stories in which you create shapely lives in a fiction. How do you create a shapely end to your own life? Mm-hmm. So that was part of the thing I was exploring with Alma, and before her, Antonia, in Afterlife. You know, what does it mean to grow old, to be an elder? Because we all, if we're lucky and live long enough, will grow old. But only some people become elders. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something mm-hmm. that you, it's a practice you have to develop too. Mm-hmm. And how do you, how are you an elder? Yeah. And I don't have answers. I just tell stories. And, you know, I don't have answers. It's through the stories that I find that I can investigate the question with complexity. And not just, oh, this is the answer. Because then it would just be a polemic, you know, a lecture.
Although I will say that, first of all, that's beautiful. But you also are an elder through your actions, right? Like yesterday I was able to tune into the event in New York, and so you were in conversation with Angie Cruz and Elizabeth Acevedo and with another younger poet whose name escapes me right now.
Torres was the last
one. Mm-hmm. Who did a beautiful reading. And you have mentored so many people, even if it's through your stories, but these are tangible actions, right? Yeah. This is like a legacy that continues because you open doors.
But, well, you know this too, Rebecca, that, and we know it also in our cultures, especially, it's emphasized that it's not a me, it's a we. Mm-hmm. So you're just a little bead in the necklace of the generations. Mm-hmm. And I got to do what I was doing because I was standing on a lot of shoulders. Mm-hmm. And so now people, the younger people, are standing on mine to reach their stars. And that's transmission. Mm-hmm. I don't own the stories. I mean, I feel delighted and touched when people acknowledge it or it gets recognized or whatever, what I do. But I always know it's not about me. Mm-hmm. I was a santera to those stories, right? Mm-hmm. I work hard. I had to master a craft. And every time I start a new book, I have to master it again because each book is a different critter. But the stories are not mine. And that's also a great liberation, because after I'm gone, the stories won't stop. Après moi, le silence, that's not the way it goes. They'll continue. They'll mm-hmm. continue. And maybe something I wrote will inspire somebody to tell all kinds of different stories, and that's the way it works. We don't own them. They're not ours. Even if we get credit, we know better.
Yes. Well, I could keep asking questions, but I think people came here also for the chance to ask you questions. So we're going to open it up to Q&A.
Thank you so much for being here. My name is Wendell Thomas, and I have a question for you. It's in regards to Junot Diaz and Edwidge Danticat. And I notice the three of you coming from the island of Hispaniola, tend to weave Creole, Spanish, back and forth into your writings. And I think it's beautiful. And even in your presentation now, you emphasize that. Do the three of you ever collaborate or share information as to techniques?
Well, I'm very close with Edwidge because her first book was sent to me to blurb. Mm-hmm. And so began a long relationship that has been really wonderful, I think, for both of us. Because, you know, growing up in the Dominican Republic, I never heard anything about Haiti. It's a little island. You know, it's like that border was, especially I was growing up in the dictatorship. Mm-hmm. And Trujillo was total racist, even though his grandmother was Haitian. You know, go figure. But he just wanted to completely obliterate any trace of race. He even had the Congress declare us an officially white nation, even though we're 80% mixed race. So, you know, this is what I grew up with. And so through Edwidge and her, you know, I would say almost my tutor, I would ask her, what should I read? You know, what Haitian authors should I read? Of course, I read all her work, but what Haitian writers should I read to educate myself? And this is the reason that we started the project Border of Lights. Mm-hmm. And Junot is part of it, Edwidge is part of it, Eddie Paulino, Cynthia Carrion, Megan Myers. There was a whole group of us that decided, you know, the governments are not going to make peace. The Dominican government is never going to address or redress the Haitian massacre. But we the people can start our own movement and spread these stories that are not in the books. That's why I never knew about it till I came to this country. That's ridiculous. And even then, it's left out of so many history books that I read when I was a young woman in this country. So I think, yes, we're very much in conversation with each other. And one of the wonderful things that can happen in diaspora is that we come here and we're not separated anymore. Mm-hmm. And so we connect, we combine, we go back, and we have this, you know, mentality, this attitude that is different and begins to change the people around us as they see and learn more about the complexity in each other's countries. And so it's really, yeah, and we speak a language, you're right. I always was embarrassed, we were talking about this backstage, because I always thought, I never took a Spanish class, mm-hmm. because we have peninsular teachers, mm-hmm. who said that I didn't speak proper Spanish, mm-hmm. because our Spanish was that rich combination of what American English is, basically. It's not pure British English, it's a mix, it's a mess, it's beautiful, it's organic, it's alive. So yeah, we're more and more comfortable writing in the language we have in our heads. We don't clean it up. When I was in that MFA program and I would write about my tia Rosa, say, it would be circled. Mm. Do you mean your Aunt Rose? Mm. And the minute my character became Aunt Rose,
my goodness,
she was out the window. She wasn't going to talk to me as an Aunt Rose. She was tia Rosa. So, you know, to more and more, that's being accepted, but mm-hmm. It's been a struggle, you know, convincing publishers, proofreaders, everybody, you know, mm-hmm. but slowly, part of what we do as writers is that we don't preach it, but we embody it. Mm-hmm. And when I'm reading an Edwidge Danticat novel and there is a Creole word in it, and I don't know what the word it means, I know what it means, mm-hmm. in that context. I pick it up. And suddenly I feel like I'm fluent, you know, and I'm part of this world. And this is what, this is the elasticity of the imagination, how when we read, we stretch those muscles, which are also the muscles of compassion, because we become the others when we read, the other person that is not like us. And that's the basic seed of compassion, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I would add to that, too. Why do we think that we have a right to understand everything? We don't, right? Like, we just need to be humble and understand that there are things that are beyond our comprehension, unless we take the time to learn them.
Right. And that some things will remain mysterious.
Yes.
And that's okay.
Yes.
That's part of the amazing wonder of this world.
Yes.
Even when everything is explained, we don't understand a damn thing. I mean, yes, I thought by the time I got to be my age, 74, that I would have it all figured out, that I would know things. And boy, every day, I think that's also part of aging. You realize you don't know nothing, you know? I mean, it's all, it's a mystery, it's a wonder, and it's so wonderful. Yeah.
Hello, thank you so much for being, I still can't believe I'm here, but thank you. And thank you, Doctora, for telling us about the event. I teach Spanish in Philly, and I just wanted to know one book you would recommend to my learners who are seniors and getting ready to leave me that will set them on their path to finding their voice and their self.
One book do for what age group?
They're seniors, and so they're like 17, 18.
Oh, my God, there's so many great books.
You can give her more than one.
Wow. But you know what happens? They fly out my head, and then at 3 o'clock in the morning, I have to text you. Ping, ping, ping. I got it. No, but, I mean, what one book? I mean, I'll tell you about the book that woke me up as a, and it wasn't even by a Latina. It was by Chinese-American Maxine Hong Kingston, The Woman Warrior. I read that book. It was in the 70s, and I was still getting my, you know, my story circled. You know, this is, she can't be Tia Rosa, she's Aunt Rose. And I open up Woman Warrior and talk about, it's a memoir, but it's 100 years of solitude, and it's a full of myths and her Chinese ancestors and all of this stuff. But I realized that all of that, you could write a story out of that, out of your own tradition. And that liberated me, because I saw the magic that she wove. And I also love that the first sentence of that book is, my mother told me never ever to repeat the story. And then she tells it. And I would joke with my Latina writer friends that all of us could have started our novels with that first sentence. Mommy told me never, ever to say this, but here it is. You know, chisme, chisme. Stories don't die. So that one meant a lot to me. I was also, my first love was poetry. So I read a lot of poetry. Neruda. I read Rilke's. One book that I give to kids, my students when I was, before I retired from Middlebury, was my student writers, Letters to a Young Poet by Rilke. That's a beautiful book, and it's about to live the questions instead of thinking that you have to find an answer, to live the questions, to live the questions. Oh, what? I mean, Poet X, since we've been talking about Liz Acevedo, the Dominican-American diaspora, now our youth poet laureate. Poetry of Ada Limón, you know, Mexican-American, native peoples, another mixture of people, and she's the poet laureate. So those are two poets that I really recommend for young people, because I think they really, the Poet X especially, it's about finding your voice. Even though you're not an English major or you know, come from that tradition. So many, oh boy, but one book. It's like choosing a favorite child. And I have a lot of them if we're talking books. I don't mean just mine. Books that I read. A book that I recently read, Piranesi. Oh, but that's fantasy. It's a wonderful book by Susanna Clark. I don't know if any of you have read it. Just discovered another writer, Claire Keegan. Do you know her? Foster. Isn't that a beautiful book? Oh, my goodness. More and more will come to me. I even have jotted a bunch down because I'm always asked that question. I always, my mind goes, but. Thank you.
Gracias por estar aquí con nosotros esta noche. I have more of a gratitude message than a question. You have come to Philadelphia so many times, and perhaps you remember being at Borders Books. Does anyone remember Borders Books?
I remember Borders Books.
And I was in the audience, this must be 25 years ago.
Oh my God.
And I asked for you to share a poem. And the poem, I said, I don't remember the title of the poem, but it was about ironing their clothes.
Oh, yes.
And you said, that's the title of the poem, yes. Ironing Their Clothes. And you read it and shared it. And I want to thank you for that poem. I want to thank you for coming to Taller Puertorriqueño after, in the time of the butterflies, and sharing with the Latino community in North Philadelphia. Mm. And you honored us with your presence at that event. Want to thank you for that.
Wow.
Thank you for your mentoring brilliant Elizabeth Acevedo, who was in Philly, and we were there loving her. We understand that you were going to read with her in New York City at one point. Or
last night.
It happened already. Oh, I missed it.
I think you can stream it.
Do that. Yeah. So thank you. Thank you for being here tonight. Eso pues, nada más, hermana. Gracias.
Oh, what a sweet. Thank you. The only thing that makes me feel bad is that because I've gotten older and, expiration date on body parts are going off left and right, I just don't have the energy anymore to do all these extra things. And so this is a very limited tour, but I wish I had the energy to keep doing some of these things.
You don't need to, because you have a legacy and a history.
Yeah, well, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take that, and I'm going to listen to it every time I feel bad that I'm not doing something. And then I think, you know what? It's my turn to sit in the front row and give the new ones coming up their standing ovation, because they need our animo, they need our hope, they need listeners. They need Filomenas, And I have been going through some health issues and wondering if I'm even going to get another book done. And I thought, well, even if it's not a book, take a little cane chair to Middlebury, I say, and put it on the street corner, and I'll storytell. It'll probably lock me up. And don't worry, when it gets cold, I'll take my little cane chair to the DR, and I'll do it there. I'll be a snowbird storyteller. Yeah.
Julia, va en español porque mi inglés es bastante loco.
Yo entiendo, pero lo que pasa es que me atrabanco cuando trato de contestar en español.
No,
así
no,
que
no.
Si te puedo contestar en inglés.
Por supuesto.
O si no,
sí.
Tengo aquí una amazing traductor.
Yeah. No. I'll just say, haz la pregunta en español y dame un momentito para traducirla en inglés, and then Julia will answer.
Also because everybody can understand that might not be.
Cuando tú contestes la pregunta, todo el mundo va a entender. Te quedará la pregunta, pero es una curiosidad, porque has estado hablando de cierres. ¿Cómo cierras una historia? ¿Cuándo sabes que la historia ya se debe cerrar? Mm-hmm. ¿Cómo hacer ese cierre?
This is a beautiful question. It's about endings. So the question is, you've been talking a lot about endings, but how do you know when a story has ended?
colorín colorado, este cuento se ha acabado. Yes. A little bell goes off and says, shut up, Julia. We're done, you know? And sometimes you take a wrong turn, and that's when a good editor, not one that is going to try to make you sound mainstream or, you know, I tell my editor, please, don't try to cut off my elbows and toes. You know, a story has a certain messiness to it because it's about human beings, and we're a very messy critter, right? So I think you can sense it. You know, it's writing is not just content. There's a rhythm to it. And once you get the rhythm, I always feel like I really can get started and moving in a story when it's like catching a wave, I guess, if you're a surfer. I catch the rhythm. And there's a rhythm to it. And you're following not just the characters and the storyline. There's a rhythm. The story has a life. And it knows where it's going if you can listen to it, like Filomena does, you know. And you can see where the closure comes. And sometimes you know, and you're a good editor will say, you know, here you just didn't want to leave the stage, but the story ended two pages earlier, you know. I don't know how it works in life, because no one's come back to tell me that you know it's over. I think aging is about realizing, because, you know, if we all live long enough, we die often. We die many little deaths, you know, and we resurrect, hopefully, and become a bigger version that incorporates that lost self. The adolescent, the child is in them, but the child is gone. The adult, and so forth. And I think with aging, too, you can feel, you know, you can feel a kind of, part of it is you're tired, but you can feel that things are, you know, every time we try to do the iPhone Uber, and or there's a download of a new update of the app, and it doesn't work. I know. This world is the world that is gone beyond me, you know? I'm still having to turn a page. And if I try to read on a device, the pages fly by, and, you know, I can't remember where I was or what I... No. So life itself lets you know. But it's never over, because new generations come that we are part of, in one way or another.
Hello. It is a pleasure to be here, sharing this space with both of you. Well, my question is, what advice do you have for young writers, young Dominican writers? You know, I am an artist myself, and one of the things that I'm experiencing right now is, how do I get over the fear, you know, of fully expressing myself and telling the stories of my ancestors, the stories of my people? How do I get over this fear, you know? I think it's my real question, actually.
You know, I was writing for about 25 years, because I really started seriously as a high school student, wanting to be a poet. I wanted to be a poet more than anything. And I was very intense and writing all the time. But my first novel wasn't published till I was 41. So I've been writing for a long time. There was a lot of discouragement because, as I said, it was the time before there was a multicultural boom. There was no such thing as Latina literature, you know, multicultural studies. None of that was there. And so everything I sent out would be rejected. And if I got any kind of a response, it was that this was interesting sociological study. It wasn't considered literature. So there was a lot of rejection, a lot of rejection. And I think you find your community. You find other writers. You find that mentor that sees it in you. And all you need is, you don't need a full cup. You just need, as you walk with your little empty cup, for someone to for you to get a little sips along the way, you know, and that can keep you going. And I think not fear that totally frightens you out of doing it, but I think a little fear is okay, because stories are powerful. Stories are powerful, and you have, when you write them, they are not just used for good. We're seeing a lot of stories spun these days, and you know that they can create divisiveness, violence, et cetera, et cetera, the stories that we tell. So as a writer, to have a sense of your responsibility and be a little afraid of this power, because you're taking on and channeling this story that you're telling, and you want it to be used or be read for someone's expansion, not as a weapon, right? Mm-hmm. So a little fear is okay, but I think the main thing is finding community. And the other thing is, if it's in you, not letting it go. That's what you were put here to do. Whatever that talent in you is, whether it's arts or cooking or dancing or whatever, if you let that go, you die, because that's what's in you. You know, so I think finding people that remind you, and that's why I was, you know, when you say something like that, that's, she filled my cup of water, you know? She filled my cup of water. And it doesn't have to be, you know, some important person that's going to pin a medal on you saying that, because, you know, a lot of times that just disappears. But people that it's mattered to them that you told that story, that's, or that you painted that painting, or that you danced that dance, or that you cooked that meal, or that you just listened, you know, to their story. You sit on a bus and the person next to you has a story. That's the thing. The beginning of the novel, it says, tell me a story, because that's universal. You know, if you start talking politics or ideas, but if you ask somebody, oh, really? So where are you from? So how did that happen? Boy, you get inside their lives and their hearts. So I don't know that that answers the question. Thank you.
Well, Julia, muchas gracias.
Thank
de todo
you,
corazón.
Rebecca.
Thank you all for being here.
And I want to do a shout out. Where's your book? She just
my
published.
Book, my book is an academic book, so if you want to fall asleep real fast, you can find
no,
it.
No, don't
and
believe
look for
it.
And
she's up for, will soon probably have tenure at Temple.
Yes.
And this is Channeling Knowledges. Now, isn't that the best title? Channeling. That could be a description of story.
It is.
Channeling Knowledges.
Mm-hmm.
And because I also use the age card, and since I'm a viejita and it's hard for me to carry books on this tour, she's going to mail it to me.
Yes, because so this is Julia's copy. This is for her.
This is my copy. But you can purchase it.
Yes, on Amazon, or better yet, maybe ask the library to buy a copy, and then you can just borrow it.
Yeah. So... And so, they even color coordinated. They're meeting each other and liking each other. I can tell that.
Oh, yes,
so,
I do.
You know, a duet. Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Thank you all.
And all of you for coming on a rainy, chilly night. It was cold and rainy out there earlier, right? Yeah, thank you for coming. I appreciate you. Thank you. And now the viejos are going home to bed. and home is a hotel.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.